This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, September 7th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, with a heat wave beating down on much of the West, we'll hear about an initiative in Denver to expand the solar energy grid and make it more affordable. We'll then hear from one of the producers of a new documentary on mail-in voting that will have a screening and panel discussion at Denver's Sci Film Center this evening. Chris Moore is back from a hiatus and will bring us his commentary, Make Them Hear You. Then, herbalist Brigitte Mars shares her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Then it's the Hightower Lowdown. On today's A Public Affair, we'll bring you a program shared by our colleagues at Rocky Mountain Community Radio. Matt Hoisch of KOTO in Telluride sat down with KUNC water reporter Luke Runyon and State Capitol reporter Scott Franz. At 9:30, Ann Cantelo will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first the headlines with KGNU's Christian Garibay.
32 Denver public schools that do not have air conditioning will close early, and 4 will close entirely because of extreme heat. DPS officials told CBS yesterday that closing because of the intensity of the high temperatures brought by the current September heat wave is a last resort to keep students and school staff safe. There are currently 55 schools in the district that don't have AC. The district had planned to install air conditioning in many of these facilities during the summer, with a nearly $130 million voter-funded bond passed in 2020. A DPS official told the Denver Post that supply chain issues delayed the installation. So far, only 6 of these schools have completed full installations. Officials say the schools will close early for the rest of the week. The long weekend for CU Boulder students living on University Hill ended in several incidents of sexual misconduct and burglaries. The Boulder Police Department reported 3 separate occasions of a male breaking into homes and engaging in sexual acts and stealing from victims. They described the suspect as a college-age man who's about 6 feet tall. KGNU's Claire Purnell reports.
The string of 3 break-ins over the past weekend all happened within a block of each other and with similar reports from victims. The first reported break-in this weekend occurred close to 4 a.m. Saturday on the Hill. The suspect broke into a house of CU Boulder female students. The victim of this incident was asleep in her bed and awoke to the suspect committing a lewd act near her, according to a release from BPD. Close to 6 a.m. on Sunday, another incident occurred 1 block over on the 1000 block of Pleasant Street. This victim also woke up to the suspect committing a lewd act near her. The victim and another woman in the same apartment reported missing car keys. On Monday at around 6 a.m., another report came in. The police say the woman in this apartment awoke to the suspect touching her in a sexual manner. The suspect then went into another bedroom in the apartment where he was confronted by another victim, according to BPD. BPD are still searching for the suspects and ask that anyone nearby with surveillance cameras or pictures share them with the police. Other victims or anyone who has information related to these crimes is asked to call Detective Flynn at 303-441-1850 and reference case 228786. Anyone who would like to remain anonymous and provide information may contact Colorado Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477. For KGNU, I'm Claire Purnell.
Donors with deep pockets are in a race to outspend each other in the upcoming gubernatorial election. Kira Damari has more.
Weld County ranch owner Steve Wells has become one of the largest contributors to Republican-backed races in Colorado. Wells, whose fortune comes from oil and gas drilling, has spent $6 million towards Republican Colorado governor candidate Heidi Ganahl. Ganahl serves on CU Board of Regents and is an outspoken critic of teaching critical race theory in schools. Wells helped lead the 2019 recall of Weld County's first Latina lesbian, elected to the State House, Rochelle Galindo. He has a history of using his money to influence Colorado politics. Wells told the Colorado Sun that he isn't sure how much he'll spend to get Ganahl elected, he just wants to beat Governor Jared Polis. I honestly believe this is probably the most important election Colorado will ever see. I look at the drugs, I look at the crime, I'm looking at the homelessness, I'm looking at the economy. These guys have made a mess out of everything, he said to the Colorado Sun. Wells spent $401,000 on campaign-related radio and TV ads that will air September 12th through November 6th. According to The Sun, they mention inflation, drug abuse, and homelessness. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
The Longmont City Council is recruiting residents to fill positions on city boards and commissions. Applicants for the volunteer positions must reside in Longmont 1 year prior to applying, be a registered voter, and attend prior meetings to the specific boards they are applying for in order to be eligible for the process. Applications are due before 5 p.m. on Friday, October 14th, 2022. More information is available online at longmontcolorado.gov/boards. The City of Boulder's Office of Arts and Culture is seeking local artists or art professionals to apply for multiple opportunities offered by the City of Boulder's Public Art Program. Some of these opportunities include a project involving the Valmont Park Rain Garden, a position on the Creative Neighborhoods Mural Program, and many more. Any artist looking to apply can visit the City of Boulder's Office of Arts and Culture website for more information. The National Weather Service expects record heat again today with highs in the upper 90s to 100 degrees across the plains. The hot and dry weather will also lead to elevated fire weather conditions. There is a heat advisory today from 10 a.m. this morning to 6 p.m. this evening. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has issued an Ozone Action Day alert. Active children and adults and people with lung disease should reduce prolonged or heavy outdoor exertion. The low today is 65. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. The Front Range Urban Corridor is likely to experience record-breaking September temperatures today and tomorrow. Three elementary schools in the Denver Public School System will not open today, and another 30 schools will release students early due to the lack of air conditioning in the facilities. Heat waves tend to put a strain on the electrical grid, and the city and county of Denver has started to incentivize renewable energy transitions. One of these projects is Solar United Neighbors, or SUN, which has helped 100 families install solar panels via energy cooperatives. Denver has also created the Solar Equity Rebate Program that allows those who qualify to get $1,000 off their systems. To qualify, households must make less than 100% of the area median income. For more on the solar cooperative program and the rebates, KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better spoke with Lee Valenzuela, Community Energy Programs Administrator at the City and County of Denver.
So the Denver Solar Co-op is something that we've partnered with Solar United Neighbors on for several years now. And this year we have our solar equity rebate. So that's providing people who make less than 100% of the area median income, which is pretty high for Denver. So people who are under that are able to get $8,000 off the cost of their solar install. And the reason that we wanted to do that is equity. It's right there in the name, right? So we want to make sure that people who can't afford the full cost of a solar install still can, one, take advantage of the co-op, which, because it's kind of getting hundreds of people together to basically group bid for solar. So generally, you can get a discount that way by working with the solar installers. And so they get that benefit, and they can also get the benefit of our rebate to help cover the cost of their install.
What are the limitations or the requirements to be part of this co-op?
So the co-op for this year has closed. We have about 200 people who signed up, so a lot of people. And the requirements are pretty minimal. You just have to be a resident of Denver, and you have to have a roof that's suitable for solar. So this is mostly focused on rooftop solar. So people who own single family homes or are in small, duplexes, things like that. And as long as your roof is suitable for solar and it can support the solar panels without too many alterations, then that's how you would qualify.
What are other options for those that live in mobile homes?
For people who live in maybe big apartment buildings or mobile homes, places where you can't really get your own solar panels, that's where we direct people towards community solar. So those are things like solar gardens, where essentially the solar panels are located elsewhere. They aren't on your home directly, but you can still get the benefits of those because those solar panels are in the garden are essentially yours, right? So you can get the bill savings even if they're not directly located on your home.
What other initiatives trying to bring more clean energy to low-income communities and communities of color are there.
So our other big program that is currently running is our Climate Action Rebate Program. So through that program, there's a section just for general residents, but we also have a specific income qualified section of that program. So if you make less than 80% of area median income, we have a list of all those income levels on our website. If you are interested, that's denvergov.org/homeenergy. And for those people, we're partnering with the Energy Resource Center to essentially give free electrification programs. So people who are interested in heat pumps, who are interested in solar, battery storage, EV charging, all of those kinds of equipment, but they're low income, they can't afford it on their own. We're working with the Energy Resource Center to basically cover the entire cost of their installation. So that's another program that we're really hoping people will take advantage of. We know that people are starting to contact ERC about that, and they're getting a list going. And the reason we've partnered with the Energy Resource Center is because the city already partners with them on weatherization. So we provide them with funding to go out and look at people's houses. Maybe they have really bad insulation, maybe they need upgraded windows, that kind of thing. So ERC is already doing that in the community. So they kind of know which people might be suitable for other types of electrification as well. And so they're going into those homes, doing assessments, doing upgrades, and then also saying, hey, you looks like your roof would be great for solar. If you want to get free solar, get some bill savings and save some money that way. Or they're saying, it looks like you might be interested in a, an electric vehicle in the future. We can help you install an EV charger and solar so that even if your electric bill goes up because you're now charging an EV, the solar can help offset some of that so you don't have to deal with that extra cost.
So what are the barriers?
A lot of low-income people don't own their own home, right? They have to live in a multifamily building. And it can be harder to figure out how to electrify those buildings since you have to deal with landlords and all of that. So that's our next step in the program, is tackling that challenge and making sure that even people in huge apartment buildings who are renters, all of that, can still take advantage of electrification, and they have less emissions indoors, lower electric bills from things like solar, community solar, all of that. So that's sort of the next step for the program next year.
Lee Valenzuela with the City of Denver talking to us about solar panels and solar gardens and solar co-ops. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longobetter.
Democracy versus the Big Lie, the truth behind mail-in voting, is a new documentary that features election experts and officials from around the country, including many from here in Colorado. The film, narrated by Alec Baldwin, examines the long history and proven safety of mail-in voting. And you can catch it this evening at Denver's Sci Film Center. Maeve Conran spoke with one of the film's producers, Jesse Ware, earlier this summer on the show Just Solutions.
You're a Colorado filmmaker. This really is a Colorado film, and it features many voices from Colorado around this, as well as voices from around the country. Why, first of all, was this a project you even wanted to take on?
I think just the importance of it. We started it before voting from home and mail-in voting was a huge conversation. It was just starting to ramp up. But I mean, like you, Maeve, I wasn't born in this country. I'm not from here. And one of the beautiful things about America is the democratic system. And the country really prides themselves on that. And as a resident here, it's just something that was very important to me and my co-producer, who is American, Steve Weiss. And while the talk about mail-in voting hadn't ramped up as much when we started this documentary, we really weren't aware of what we were fully in for when we started it. It became extremely apparent that it was going to be a big talking point in the previous election. But even without that, there were many controversies and people just were wanting to vote more than ever and wanting to make sure that their voices were heard. And I think I just can't stress enough the importance of voting. And I think it was just an honor to get to cover such an important topic that affects every single person living in this country.
What was the big theme that emerged when you were doing these interviews about either the safety of mail-in voting, the efficiency around it, the convenience, but also, the concerns about the big lie and how it is threatening our democracy? What were you hearing from the people you spoke to?
Starting with experts who work day in and day out to make sure that every ballot is counted, that the systems work, that if there are any issues, how can they fix them? I mean, these people are just working around the clock. We spoke to them a lot, and they were really concerned about the misinformation. They were concerned about, you know, poll workers were concerned about their safety at times. But one of the, you know, the big emerging themes was, you know, this is a bipartisan effort in every place that we spoke to. It's a bipartisan effort, a nonpartisan effort. There's people from, you know, Republican, Democrats, independents, you know, that have their eyes on every single mail-in ballot or voter-on ballot that comes in, and that there is no, you know, mail-in ballot fraud. You know, obviously there's small instances in small places. It's physically impossible to have a perfect system, but there is no big scam happening. And yeah, just the misinformation that was being spread that was honestly keeping people from voting, making them more nervous to vote. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the main theme that we saw there, is the experts were working hard to do their jobs and weren't finding problems in the system. They've been, all been doing it for many years and constantly work to improve it.
Well, Jesse Grace, the film, The Democracy Versus the Big Lie, The Truth Behind Mail-In Voting. What do you hope people will get from the film and from the documentary that you've co-directed?
Yes, absolutely. We really hope to just educate the public and show, you know, shed light on a lot of these issues. Maybe they heard some rumors and didn't get a chance or didn't dive into the topic deep themselves or into the misinformation that was being spread. So we really tried to do that deep dive into the topic in as many places as possible and showcase what is actually happening from behind the scenes. So hopefully people develop a little more trust in the system that we have here. And also hopefully this prompts them to do more research on their own and figure out, okay, well, what access does my state, does my county have? You know, who's in control of this? Where can I go? Like, is this a good option for me? What are the pros and the cons? So, you know, we're not trying to provide an answer for everybody and say everybody should be doing, you know, mail-in voting. We're not trying to say that at all. We're just trying to present the information, say, hey, you know, this is what happened in the previous election. This is the systems that are in place across the country. Maybe you should do a deep dive into your own area and educate yourself so that you can, you know, do one of the most important things that you can do for this country, and that's vote.
Well, I would like to give a shout out to say that the documentary has just recently won the best feature at the Political Film Festival. And as I said, we are delighted to be screening it on Free Speech TV.
That was Jesse Ware, one of the producers of the documentary Democracy Versus the Big Lie, speaking with Maeve Conran on the show Just Solutions earlier this summer. Jesse Ware will participate in a panel discussion following a screening of the film this evening at the Sci Film Center in Denver at 7 p.m. The panel discussion will also feature the United States Postal Service Board Governor Amber McReynolds and Executive Director of the Colorado County Clerks Association, Matt Crane. We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. The Inflation Reduction Act, passed a month ago, included a side agreement with Joe Manchin that would speed up new energy projects, including expediting a controversial gas pipeline through West Virginia. To win Manchin's support for the climate, energy, and health care package in the Inflation Reduction Act, Democratic leaders agreed to push side legislation to expedite energy projects. These bills would require 60 votes to be approved and would need both Democratic and GOP support, but such bills could be opposed by progressive Democrats who have warned against them. The deal would set new two-year limits for environmental oversight on major projects. It would centralize decision-making with one agency in charge of pushing approvals through. The bill would specifically push to approve the Mountain Valley Pipeline, which would transport Appalachian gas from Manchin's West Virginia to Virginia. To ram oil and gas projects through, the bills would limit legal challenges to energy projects and give the Energy Department the ability to almost unilaterally approve electric lines, quote, in the national interest. Another provision would make it harder for government agencies to deny new approvals based on certain environmental concerns that are not directly caused by the project itself. There are new challenges for Democratic lawmakers who consider these permitting changes as the price to pay to secure Manchin's support for hundreds of billions in clean energy projects. Climate groups mostly agree that the trade was worthwhile because Manchin's vote on the broader package opens up funding for a variety of renewable energy projects. But many Democrats are unhappy. Senator Jeff Merkley said, quote, "I really want to see all the details on the permitting. We all know that any deal that would be struck between Schumer and Manchin would have a lot of fossil fuels in it. The question is on balance." The reaction to the agreement has been mixed. Christy Goldfuss from the Center for American Progress said that, quote, "It appears this deal does not circumvent the necessity of gathering information about the impacts of a proposed project." Democrats' climate provisions would dwarf the impact of the West Virginia pipeline. The firm Energy Innovation found that greenhouse gas emissions would fall by as much as 41% below 2005 levels by 2030 with the bill. Quote, "We had to pass the Inflation Reduction Act if we want to get on track to cutting carbon pollution in half by a decade," said Leah Stokes, an energy policy expert at the University of California at Santa Barbara. "Without this legislation, we don't have a pathway to get there. With it, we have a fighting chance. There are provisions I don't agree with, but we have to be clear-eyed. Failure is not an option right now. We have to get climate investments over the finish line." But as specific bills are drafted to expedite oil and gas permitting, you can contact your senators and congressperson if you have an opinion on these upcoming bills. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars to talk a little bit about self-care. You know, a few years ago, I was working on one of my books, writing Addiction Free Naturally. And at the end of the day, I said, gosh, Brigitte, you just sat here in front of this computer all day. You didn't get outside. You didn't take your supplements. I don't think you ate a salad. What's up? You're not following your own advice. So I decided that I was going to make a list of all the healthy things I could do in a day. Okay, there's so many healthy things I could do in a day. I can floss my teeth. I can do yoga. I can go for a hike. I can do dry brush skin massaging. I could do a fruit mask. I could eat green salad. I could do a headstand. I could wear healing colors. I could drink herbal tea. I could do my eye exercises. The list went on and on and on. I could clean something. I could use my water pick. Who has time to do all that stuff? Not you, not me, most likely. So then I remembered how it was in elementary school for a lot of us, where we maybe had a chart on the refrigerator that had some chores that we were supposed to do every day. Make your bed, take out the trash, set the table, you know, stuff like that. And then you had the days of the week. So I took this list of all the healthy things I could do in a day. And then I wrote across the top the days of the week. And of course, you know, being Brigitte Mars, I had to write the days according to their planets, you know, Sunday, Moon Day, Mars Day, Mercury Day, etc. And then I decided that I was going to do 7 to 10 healthy things a day. And just like in elementary school, you know, give myself a little star if I did it, or a little check or something. So now, rather than going to bed and feeling like, oh, I'm such a loser, it's like I did, for me, probably 10 healthy things a day. And at the end of the week, you can applaud, I did 70 healthy things a week. And doing it as a little chart, it also gives you a place to see, oh, I was really good about the mental portion of it, like reading something every day, doing some kind of self-help podcast. But then maybe I need to work more on the exercising thing. I challenge you to make a list of all the healthy things with the days of the week. Put it on your computer on a spreadsheet and print it out. And, you know, maybe different people in the family have different colors for their stars, because self-care is certainly where it's at. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
All the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Christian Garibay, Chiara De Mare, Claire Purnell, Rosanna Longobetter, Alexis Kenyon, Maeve Conran, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown, and then it's a public affair. That's after these news headlines from the BBC.